Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, Dieter Kurtenbach is back. It's been, what, like 2 weeks since you've been on the podcast? I tried to like give you a little bit of time because I know you're moving.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough, man. It's rough. And it's like, it's not even, it's maybe 10% done. Like,
Let me
just give a word of advice here. You think, oh, the slow move, right? That would make sense. It's easier. It's less stressful. No, what you're really doing is you're taking a really stressful moment. You're not really mitigating that stressful moment of I have to move today. You're just adding it to a little bit of it every day in the lead up. It's a pain in the ass. Don't do it. Just pick a day, get all your stuff in boxes and go and just rip the Band-Aid off.
So I feel very strongly about hiring movers.
Like yeah, we're doing that. We have movers coming, yeah. But like just for the big pieces of furniture. But like there's also just stuff, right? And it's like
right. You
got to pack up the stuff, and then you got to move it, and then you got to find a place for it in the new place. And so it's just like one thing per day. We're also like this house that we got. It's funny, like the guy who owned it before us was very clearly like a do-it-yourselfer. So like that's great, you know, I get it. We should all aspire to that level. But he was like a do-it 95% yourselfer and then the five like... Nothing is like completely fucked, but like there's stuff like you guys half painted the outside windows, like either don't paint the windows or like pick a side here, or like you know, so like he obviously built these kitchen cabinets and they're fine, they're really nice kitchen cabinets, but like he didn't paint the inside and there's glass paneling and it's like, so we're just going to look at the plates and some unfinished wood, so it's like you have to paint that shit. It just adds up, and now I'm starting to figure out why I was a big fan of renting.
Yeah. Someone who does still rent, and like Laura and I have like looked into like buying recently. I just look at this and I'm like, all right, this is so easy. Why am I considering doing this? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Unless you're somebody who feels really strongly about like having home equity and stuff and getting into the marketplace, which I'm personally not, but it's not totally my call. It's like, it's a super stressful thing. I guess it will be rewarding at some point, or I'll just die stressed.
I would probably guess the latter.
Yeah, it's a good bet.
Even if the former, like the two things are like not mutually exclusive, you will probably just die stressed, like regardless of what happens with the house.
My shoulders haven't unclenched in 20 years. I feel like this isn't gonna this isn't gonna change that paradigm.
Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have been really, really good recently. We're going to talk about Anthony Davis and that whole weird, like, will he or won't he sit out situation. We're going to talk about buyout guys in the, I guess, throughout the entire NBA, realistically. Mm-hmm. Guys like Wayne Ellington, Markieff Morris is interesting, given that he just got the second opinion. We're going to talk about the fact that you were in the weird Kevin Durant news conference where he decided to call out Ethan Strauss.
That was fun.
And then, fine, I don't know. We'll just kind of jump around, you know. We might talk about Boston. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. We're sponsored by Hims and by Bet Online. So go to both of those places and either start placing bets on Bet Online or go fix your men's health wellness with with Hims. What else is going on, though? Have you been? Do you want to talk about the Thunder right away? Do you want to talk about movies? Where do we want to jump in here?
Dude, I don't even know what movies are anymore at this juncture, which sucks because, like, usually, actually, that's not true. What did I watch? I rewatched Being John Malkovich. I don't know why. It was just on the television, and that's a weird movie. But other than that, it's a good movie. It's a good movie. I can understand why it was a big deal then. It seems deliberately funky now, like kind of corny in a way. But alas, it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. I don't know. So different era. Let's get into this Thunder thing. Cause I just gotta get this off my chest.
Yep. Let's go on ahead and talk about the Thunder. Give me the takes. I just want takes.
I'm shorting them. I still think that the Thunder are the second best team in the Western Conference, but right now there's a cresting wave of Thunder optimism, right? And I don't see it. I understand it, but I don't see it because I'm looking here at just the raw data. Over the last 20 games, Paul George has been MVP worthy. No question about it. I mean, just absolutely outrageous how good he has been. 32 points per game. He's making 46% of his shots, 45 from three on 5 3-pointers per game. So, like, you add that up, he's not doing very well from two. So this is a lot of 3-point variance, in my opinion, from Paul George. On top of the fact that Russell Westbrook, yes, he has this triple-double streak going, and so obviously he's impacting the game in a positive sense, that, you know, in rebounds and assists, maybe mostly assists. But the dude's still shooting, you know, in the last 20 games, he's shooting 40% from the field and 25% from three, and he's still shooting 4 3-pointers per game. So, like, I just have a really hard time. And that's it. Like, after that, it's Dennis Schroeder, Jeremy Grant. Steven Adams is awesome on the defensive end, don't get me wrong, but, like, I'm not fearing him offensively, even though I think he has taken a step forward in that regard. Terrence Ferguson and Abdel Nader, like, this is a two-man team right now. Adams, if you include one side of the court, and I just don't think that Paul George can keep this up, and I do think that given what we've seen all year, that this is going to be the norm for Russell Westbrook. So why would I start buying in on a 9-1 streak and really pushing? Why would I buy in on them beating the Warriors, who, by the way, are doing the damn same thing, when they're just riding hot? I don't see it. I do think that we should insert Paul George higher into the MVP conversation. I do think that the Thunder are a really good defensive team, and that could, you know, make, you know, in a theoretical series with the Warriors, that could get them to 6 games perhaps. But Paul George, these numbers are totally predicated on this crazy 3-point streak he's on. And while he's always been a good 3-point shooter, he's not this good. So I'm shorting the Thunder.
I think there's a lot of that is fair. I've always been someone who at the start of the season said I thought the Thunder were the second best team in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
I still believe that, and I've seen nothing throughout the course of the season that makes me disbelieve that. In fact, I've seen a lot that makes me believe in that more, like Paul George.
Does that have more to do with the fact that every other team in the Western Conference besides the Warriors kind of sucks and the Thunder are kind of what you expected? Or is it because it is expectations versus reality?
So, like, people talk about, like, the four teams in the Eastern Conference, right? That are just so much better than every other team in the West other than the Warriors.
Right.
I don't think I agree with that. Like, I think That's the fair. Thunder are very much in that conversation. Like,
yes.
The Thunder are as good as the Raptors, in my opinion. They're as good as the Celtics. They're better than the Celtics, I think, to be honest.
What about the Bucks? What about the Sixers?
The Bucks, I would put a level ahead because this is my new thing. Is I think we've been underrating the Bucks.
Absolutely, 1,000% as the number one Bucks stan. Yeah,
I just want to straight up point that out. Like, you look at their net rating. Their net rating is almost 10 right now. That is an unbelievable number.
That's Warriors level
stage
shit
in the season. Yeah, like that is like really, really good Warriors teams of the last few years. Heat teams with LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. Like that's the standard that the Bucks have played at so far this season. They're going to win pretty darn close to 60 games this year, and they're going to have just a number that is astronomical in terms of net rating, especially now that they've gotten Nikola Mirotic, who really, really helps them out. So we look at all of what the Thunder have done, and I think that they absolutely deserve to be placed in the conversation as a top five team in the league this season. And I know that, I trust them a little bit more than Denver because I think that they have at least, like, I think Paul George is better than Nikola Jokic. Yeah. I would still probably take Russ for a playoff series ahead of Nikola Jokic too. And then kind of what we expected all season with the Nuggets defensively has really happened over the course of the last like month and a half or so. They've fallen off defensively pretty substantially. They're down to 14th overall in defensive rating. I want to say that over the last month, they're in the 20s somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to see that. I trust Oklahoma City a little bit more than them just because I trust the star power. I trust the offensive creation in the half court come playoff time. And I trust the defense to a bigger extent. Now,
No question. I'm with you 100% on that.
So if that's the case, I mean, so you're selling the Thunder. What are you selling them off
I'm selling of? Them as a top-tier team.
So you don't think they're a top-five team in the NBA?
Right. I think that there's a very distinct cutoff. Warriors, Bucks, Sixers, Raptors, cut. Right there. That's my stance.
So I would say that it's Warriors. Like, if I was tiering the NBA, right, mm-hmm. I would say...
Let's put Warriors, out some power rankings right now.
Hashtag power rankings. I would say Warriors by themselves.
Okay.
I would say Bucks by themselves.
Okay.
And then I would say the Sixers, the Thunder, the Raptors, probably the Celtics, and probably the Nuggets in there as well.
I'll give you another layer to this onion. I'm taking the Blazers over the Nuggets, and I think that the Blazers are closer to the Thunder than the Thunder are close to the Warriors.
Okay, say that again. Wait.
Okay. So we're talking about kind of this middle tier, right?
Right.
Or this secondary greatness. So Warriors, Bucks, we can all agree on 1-2. Separation point doesn't really matter. Next best team, I think we can all agree, is now they're going to be the Sixers.
After Maybe. That, you. I think probably, but their depth is a real like concern.
That's fair. But they've helped that out in, theoretically helped that out. And they've been usually pretty active on the buyout market. We'll see. But I depth's a concern, no doubt. But man. I have to separate them a little bit from the Raptors, who I am high on. I'm still high on the Raptors. And I think that the Raptors are better than the Thunder. I think my point is mostly if you're going to go whatever team it is outside of that top five, right? If we all agree on the top five and we can swap around a couple of spots, that sixth team, I think it's the Blazers and not
so
the Nuggets.
You're throwing the Thunder in that fifth spot then.
Yeah, I think we can all agree on Thunder in the fifth spot. And I think that the Blazers, I mean, the Celtics have to get involved in here, but like they're a mess. And right now, I just have a hard time buying into them. If we're just going Western Conference, let's say, I mean, more the take here is I think that we're not talking about the Blazers enough. And while we're really pumping up the Thunder because they're on this nice 9-1 run here, you know, Blazers haven't been great as of late, but I do think that in a playoff series, I wouldn't be shocked if they could beat the damn Thunder in a playoff series.
It's a good question. I mean, the Blazers obviously have those playoff demons. They've lost 9 straight playoff games, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, not great. I'm not lying, but history is not necessarily a predictor of future success or failure.
Definitely true. They're just the same team, though. Like, Jusuf Nurkić right. is a little bit better. Rodney Hood gives them like a slightly better dimension off of the bench than what they've had. It's kind of the same team though, I guess, is where I'm at.
No, that's fair. I mean, I wish that they would have done something bold at the deadline. Had they gone in, just gone in on this year, right? Because otherwise they're treading water. Now, the fact that the team is probably going to be sold here in the near future from the Paul Allen Trust, and there's a whole mess with that. So I can understand the mitigating circumstances, but I don't know. You just break it down. I just don't see a lot of separation in the Western Conference between like 2 and 6. The Jazz, the Rockets, the Blazers, the Thunder, and the Nuggets. And maybe the Thunder are the class of that. I think we can actually agree that the Thunder are the class of that. But I don't think that they're closer to that top, those top-tier teams than they are to that, you know, kind of middling glut between 2 and 5. They just seem more in sync with those teams than they do with the top-level teams, and certainly the Warriors.
I think that my take right now is that Utah finishes like in the top 3 of the conference.
Okay. And that's based on them just kind of figuring out and Donovan Mitchell deciding that he wanted to show up for the year.
So I think they figured it out to an extent. I think that I would feel a lot more comfortable if they would have traded for Mike Conley. And I think that is something they probably should have done.
Yes.
But I think that they have figured things out. You know, at the end of the day, part of this too is that, you know, we talked about this earlier in the season. They had this super road heavy early slate. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone kind of took that as, oh, this team has taken a step back, when that really wasn't the case. Rudy Gobert has taken a pretty big step forward. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is the same guy he was last season. He's going to keep, I think, maybe improving as the season goes on.
He was really rough to start the year, man.
He was really bad to start the year. Yeah, he was really rough. Joe Ingles, I think, is better than what he's been in the past. Joe is still just an awesome player. I think numerically, you probably can't really make that case necessarily. I think he's down shooting threes. He's down rebounding, but I still just look at the way that he runs the offense from time to time, and it's so incredibly important. Jay Crowder looks a little bit more comfortable than what he was last year.
I don't think Jake Crowder's ever going to look comfortable, even though that system is perfectly suited for him in theory.
Derek Favors, I think, is going to be really good for them down the stretch. And Dante Exum, I hope, can get some things together. I know he has the ankle injury right now, but I think he does give them some upside going forward.
I think that the Jazz are a good team. I don't think that they're any better than the Rockets. I don't think they're any better than the Blazers. I don't think they're any better than the Thunder, and I don't think they're any better than the Nuggets. I think that they're right where they're at. Now, maybe, you know, listen, the standings don't necessarily have to reflect that. They can go on a nice little run here, but the fact that they're still playing Jay Crowder as many minutes as they play Jay Crowder and nothing seems to be developing there is concerning, right? And the fact that Ricky Rubio is maybe reverting a bit is concerning. Like, they're going to have to go into full playoff mode where Donovan Mitchell just tries to James Harden them over the finish line every game pretty soon, sooner than most teams for sure. Warriors don't even turn on playoff mode until the second or third round. I mean, I think the Jazz are going to have to do it in early March.
Maybe I'm a little bit off on this because I guess I don't know that they catch the Nuggets necessarily, but no. You know,
but I think it's a good time.
I think the Jazz finish fourth in the West.
That's fine. I think I'm in on the Blazers. I honestly do. I think that maybe they've been right in the middle of it all year. Dame is incredible. You know, Nurkic, as you said, has been so, you know, I think he's been actually really markedly better than he was last year. They got a little something there. And maybe it's just because no one's talking about them or taking them seriously for good reason. As you mentioned earlier, they don't win in the playoffs, so why pay attention to them now? But I feel like now's a good time. If we're doing a stock report here, now's a good time to consider diversifying your portfolio with some Portland Trailblazers stock, because there's a lot of hot buys on the street, and Blazers, that price has stayed stable for a while.
Yeah, let's go back to the Thunder.
The reason
I'm going to go back
sell that stock, baby, sell it now,
is that, again, I just keep coming back to the fact that they have two elite players and they have a terrific defense. That's a good sample.
It's a great thing. I'm not debating the latter. That defense is playoff worthy. I mean, that's a playoff series winning defense. Easy for me to say. Are we certain that Russ is of the great caliber at the moment?
I think he's a top 12 player in the league.
Man, he is so inefficient right now, though.
Yeah.
And it's been that way all year. I mean, is there any chance that that changes? Because unless it changes, I just have a hard time taking him seriously as somebody who's not going to shoot his team out of a game.
So I certainly agree that he has been inefficient all season. That's just kind of the fact of the matter, right? I think you mentioned it earlier, even in this 9-game triple double streak, he's 39% from the field, 26% from three, 64% from the line.
And he's still shooting all of the same shots, which is my big concern. Like, his game hasn't changed at all. He's doing the same stuff.
5 turnovers a game. Like, this is still a thing. They've won 8 of 9, which is great. But I do think that there is something to just volume, being able to do things on the volume that Russ does. Now, I'm not saying, like, look, volume plus efficiency is always going to be better than just volume, right? But just being somebody who can do shit on the floor, like being somebody who can make shit happen on a basketball floor, which, regardless of the finishing, Russ can do. Like, Russ is just a havoc creator on the basketball
floor. Exactly.
That stuff helps. Like, I know
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that, but top 12 in the NBA. I mean, this is it's a bit of a Rorschach test for the modern game, right? Because I saw somebody at Sports Illustrated point out, like, why isn't he being included in the MVP discussions? And it's like, because he's nowhere near it.
Yes. Russ is nowhere near MVP.
Yeah. Nor should he be, because I'm arguing that he's not a top 12 player in the NBA right now. Yeah. But
I mean, like, realistically, so top 12 guys in the NBA. Kawhi Leonard, Joel Embiid.
This is a weird way to start this list.
I'm just going through conferences in like divisions.
I'm like, Joel Embiid, making some sort of a statement here.
Kawhi Leonard. I would have Kyrie Irving ahead of Russ at this stage. Giannis.
Paul George, Damian Lillard. Yes. James Harden, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis.
That's 9. That's 10.
Damian Lillard.
Yes. 11.
Bradley Beal.
I would not have Beal ahead of Russ. I think that is the line for me where, like, I look at it. I think Bradley Beal is a great basketball player. He is genuinely a top 20 player in the league now. I think that is a real thing. But there's something to just being able to create havoc, I think, in a way that Bradley Beal, he's not athletic enough to create as many plays as Russell Westbrook does. And I know that he finishes his opportunities at a higher clip than what Russell Westbrook does. But, like, there is just something to being able to be Russ. Create the
first place. Yeah, I get it.
And being able to create plays in the first place. Like, the fact that Oklahoma City has the 14th best offensive rating right now, mm-hmm. I would bet in large part is because, and I'm going to look this up very quickly, before making my undeniably.
Well, then, okay, how about this then? Is Blake Griffin a better option right now than Russ?
It's a good question. I think that's a very fair question.
What about Kemba Walker?
I would not have Kemba ahead of Russ either.
Okay. Maybe he is a top 12.
So this is kind of what I thought would happen. So,
I mean, then we have to include Oklahoma defense, City, which is a whole other thing.
So Oklahoma City this season is playing at the second fastest pace in the NBA. They have the fifth most offensive transition possessions in the NBA. Without Russ, that doesn't happen. His incredible incredible defensive rebounding ability helps them get out on the break faster. It helps them get earlier offense faster, which, as any person will tell you who does this,
that's basic basketball.
Getting offense early is better than getting offense after letting a team set up in the half court.
That
stuff really helps Oklahoma City. It helps them have a top half offense.
I'm not arguing he's not an impactful player. Certainly his impact, I think, transcends his abilities almost right now, if that makes any sense.
And like,
he's a hyper impactful player. I just don't know if that impact is always a positive.
And maybe it is, like, maybe it's top 15 versus top 12 or something like that. Like, maybe it's somewhere in that range.
And then we
have
to have a debate on where, you know, elite qualifies and all this crap. I'm just saying he's not in that pantheon that he's certainly become accustomed to over the last few years, at least in my book, which of course is the only book that matters.
Right. And like, look, he's definitely not what he was. I think there's no doubt. Like, Russell Westbrook, the last three seasons the last two seasons before this one was the first year he was the MVP of the league, right? Mm-hmm. The second year he averaged triple double. This year, again, he's averaging a triple double. Like, averaging a triple double is hard.
I don't disagree with that. At the same time, you know, numbers can lie. The dude's shooting 41% and 24% on the year. Like, that's notable. He's only shooting 65% on free throws.
It's extraordinarily notable, and I think
dude can't shoot.
I think it's why he's dropped from being like a top 6 or 7 player in the league to a top 15 player in the league.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough.
But like,
fair enough on that.
He also is averaging more assists per game than he ever has. He is.
But how much of that is just Paul George knocking down contested three-pointers in dudes' faces because he takes 11, 12 a game?
It's probably part that. That definitely plays a role. Having Paul George shooting the lights out plays a role in upping his assist numbers. But I just think that, I guess my point is, we often talk about volume as if it's this bad thing. And sometimes it is a bad thing. And I'm not saying that Russ can't excise some of the terrible shit he does on the basketball floor, like the terrible decisions he makes on the basketball floor.
Right.
I also just believe that there is something inherently valuable about being able to do things on an NBA floor at volume like Russ can. And I think that we often underrate that ability to do things at volume like Russ can.
I think that that's extremely fair. I just think that we have an expectation of what Russ is in our minds. And you say, oh, he's averaging a triple-double, and there's a presumption that things are the same. And they are very much not the same. And given sort of the overall roster breakdown of, maybe this is just a backdoor way to argue that Paul George is the MVP, but looking at the roster breakdown of the Thunder and Russ's regression, well, I don't know if it's a regression, but certainly
it is. You know, his slide. I mean, like we said, we just talked about the fact that Russell Westbrook has gone from being like a top seven player down to like a top 15-ish player, right?
But it's regression implies that it's going towards something that was expected. It's a semantical argument, nevertheless.
True.
Like, Russ is down, right? The rest of the Thunder, solid, but nothing special. I mean, adding Dennis Schroeder was the best move they made in the past year, and it's been fine. I think everyone is getting what they expected out of that ordeal. Like, the difference is Paul George is just gone completely nuclear, and that's
right.
Totally awesome to watch. But, man, like,
Jeremy Grant has made a leap, too. Jeremy Grant is better than he was.
Okay, yes, that's absolutely fair. That's absolutely fair. There wasn't a very high bar to begin with, and he's been really good as of late as well. But, like, No one's going into a playoff series, like, scheming up how to stop Jeremy Grant.
No, they're absolutely not. But I think it's worth saying, hey, he's been a really good, like,
no, you're right.
Dude,
you're
who
right
does
that.
The dirty work. He started to knock down threes. He's hitting 37% on three attempts per game from three. Like, he has just far enough diversified his game to where he is now a legitimate starter in the NBA.
I'm generally curious, when you look at teams like Houston, I would argue Utah, and a team like the Thunder, I'm generally curious what happens when transition opportunities are significantly diminished because teams start giving a shit about transition defense because it's the end of the year and playoff spots are on the line, and then especially in the playoffs. And when their half-court stuff is so predictable and so, in the Thunder's case, I would argue reliant on one guy to be totally fucking awesome in terms of, in that being Paul George, I just
basically have to buy into Paul George.
Yeah, man. Like, and listen, I'm all in on Paul George in the regular season, but it's a different beast when teams start actually coming up with individual defensive game plans to stop a team over a 7-game series. Like,
you know what,
it's a totally.
I'm going
to
say this about, like, Paul George. He has been pretty good in the playoffs. Like, he's been.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I think, but really, really good in the playoffs.
But is he? I mean, even with those Pacers teams, did he ever have to carry this kind of a load?
I mean, what was it? It was the 2017 year where they got swept out by the Cavs team, right? But played.
It
like
worked out great.
Really
exactly.
Competitive. But they played four really competitive games. And Paul George,
series.
That was not Paul George's fault that they eliminated.
No. And if they get eliminated because Paul George doesn't continue on this, you know, nuclear conquest that he's on, that's not going to be his fault either.
Paul George in that playoff series averaged 28-9-7 in 2 steals a game while playing like perimeter defense on LeBron James part of the time, not all the time. They had Boyan on him a little bit. They had like some different guys on him from time to time. He was very, very, very good in that series and like went toe to toe with LeBron James and just didn't have the horses to back him up.
I just don't think he has the horses to back him up this year either. Now he doesn't have to go up against LeBron. Well, maybe he does. We'll find out. But
you know what, though? He has Russ. And he has, like, Russ can be a second guy to take the pressure off and create something in the half court, at least.
He definitely can create, but the question is, who's he creating for? It seems a very linear connection between the two. It's Russ penetrates, he dishes, and the entire idea is to get the ball to either PG immediately or to get it off of one extra pass from the corner. And it's like teams can just over rotate that stuff in the playoffs and they can live with the results of, you know, Terrence Ferguson having to shoot a corner three or something. And maybe they get burned on that, but it would require a lot of discipline that honestly I haven't seen, and a little bit of craftiness that I haven't seen from the Thunder offense as of yet. And the defense, as much as we like, you know, sort of the pieces that comprise it, And it's definitely going to be a top half defense in the playoffs in the Western Conference for sure, probably top two. But man, I don't know if it's
like I might buy Utah's defense more than I buy Oklahoma City's, but they're definitely a top three defense in the NBA.
Yeah, okay. Maybe then this isn't an issue of they're not very close to two; they're a lot closer to four. Like, I don't know. I'm not ready to go all in on the Thunder defense being a lockdown unit for the playoffs that's going to, you know, bring the margins back a little bit closer towards them so that they don't have to be this crazy offensively to win games. I'm just not ready to get there yet.
Well, let's talk about Paul George real quick. Where would you have Paul George in the MVP voting right now?
Third. And I would prefer to have him second over Harden, but
so Giannis, Harden, and Paul George. I think that's right, for what it's worth. I think that's what I would have.
I would love if Paul George kept this up so that we don't have to continue. Like, talking about the box scores versus reality thing, holy shit, with James Harden. Like, that to the next level. So, yeah, I want Giannis to win it. I think that that would be a good reward for, again, a Bucks team that, as you know, you and I agree, is not getting talked up enough as an elite team in the NBA. The Harden thing has worn on me big time. And PG is playing it on both ends. I mean, two-way play should mean something. And Giannis certainly provides it. I don't think anyone's doing a better job. I mean, Paul George could be the defensive player of the year and, you know, put up hyper elite offensive numbers. If that isn't in the top three, I don't know what we're really doing here.
So, yeah, I mean, like, James Harden has to do what he's doing right now.
Right, right. I agree on that. They don't really have much of a choice. That doesn't mean that I have to like it.
Yeah, I mean, like, he is 30 straight games over 30, I believe it is, right?
And how many of those did he shoot like 27% from the field?
I don't think it's as many as
it's not a lot, but there have been some. The fact that there have been some is telling.
Part of the fact that he does that occasion. Well, here, you said 27 from the field. I actually don't think it's any now that I'm looking at it. 30.4, I think, is his lowest during the stretch, which isn't great. Like, he has multiple games in the 30s. But part of it is he takes 15 threes a game during the stretch, too. And you're just inherently going to shoot less from three than you are from two. He's doing it pretty efficiently. He's getting to the line a ton. It's not an aesthetically pleasing style of basketball. No, but he's averaged 41, 7.7, and 7.5 over the last 30 games, which is just absolutely one of the best individual 30 game runs in basketball history, probably.
Yeah, no question.
So I look at what he's doing and I'm just like, okay, like I can't have beef with this. This is fucking unbelievable. You know, he has a 63%.
So long as you don't have to watch it.
He has a 63% true shooting percentage in these 30 games. It's incredible. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. 39 assist rate.
He has a 63% or is it 62% true shooting on the year?
Yeah. Like 63 or 39
on 39% usage,
13 turnover rate. It's just bizarre. It's bizarre.
It's not bizarre. This is what they did 2 years ago. It just wasn't this good.
I was going to say that's the key. It's not like this. This is the logical
paradigm that I'm having to fight, because 2 years ago when Russ won the MVP over him, I thought that was ludicrous because you were looking for box score stats instead of sort of the deeper metrics. And I thought Harden was far more valuable in that year. This is the same formula that they used when D'Antoni came in. They didn't have a point guard and he just put Harden at point guard and said, do whatever the hell you want. We're just going to do basic, you know, dribble drive penetration stuff, you know, drive and kick, and everything's going to go through you. He's at 39% usage on the year. It's not, no one's even close to that. I mean, not even close. I'm looking at it right now. Like, Kevin Durant's at 30. Stephen Curry's at 30. I mean, he's 10 points higher than these guys. And so there has to be some credit given there. That said,
the craziest thing here, too, is that they've gone 21-9 during that stretch. And they were starting games with, like, here's a starting lineup.
He made Kenneth Faried a player again.
James Harden, Austin Rivers, PJ Tucker, Gary Clark, Eric Gordon, and then off the bench, Gerald Green, James Nunnally, Nene, and Marquise Chris.
Yeah, we're talking like straight up lottery team, if not for James Harden.
Right. So, like, I'm just looking at this. Like, we've got James Harden, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers, Kenneth Faried, Gerald Green, James Ennis. Faried has been
awesome as of late, by the way.
Gary Clark. Yeah, like, look.
He's like a double-double machine as of late.
Sure, like, that's great, but...
But, you know, no, I'm not saying that Kenneth Faried is, like, it's a testament to Harden. Listen, I fully understand how awesome Harden's been. I just don't like it. It's a pure aesthetical argument here. If you want to look at just the numbers, that's fine. But if you have to watch the games, you're like, oh, Jesus, it's so rote. And, I don't like it for basketball, and so I don't want to reward it. That's my argument. It's not a good argument. That's my argument.
Yeah, I think that Harden has to be number two for MVP, but I would have Paul George at number three. Paul George has been unbelievable leading their half court offense to even respectability, and he's probably the defensive player of the year right now, maybe second behind Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, it's really hard to say defensive player of the year right now.
Yeah, it's close.
It's probably those two. I'm still waiting for Draymond to, you know, do something. though he's been a lot better as of late, I just don't think he's going to get the run necessary. And the Warriors' defense hasn't been suffocating. They're just still outscoring people. So,
yeah, it's kind of hard for me to have Dre in mix.
Can't blame you. That said, when it when Dre does those flashes, you're like, oh man, there is no better defender in the NBA because of his versatility and what he's able to do. But it's just been flashes this year, whereas in years past it was every possession. And
Miles Turner should be up there. Milwaukee's weird in the fact that like they don't really have like a crazy standout defender, in my opinion, other than Giannis.
Who would you separate out of it? I mean, you can't really give it to Giannis because I don't think Giannis is of that ilk. I mean,
I would say he's Bledsoe? Second team all defense, Giannis. Bledsoe's been better defensively this year. He's been good. Brogdon's been good defensively. Middleton is solid defensively. They just have a lot of really good two-way guys.
Did Mike Budenholzer win defensive coach of the year?
Mike Budenholzer is probably going to win coach of the year. So that
one would hope.
That is certainly a winner. Let's move on.
Sorry. That was a very small thing that really snowballed, and that's on me.
If you had to bet on the second best team in the West, who would you say?
When it's all said and done? Like, what is the metric here?
The team that goes to the Western Conference Finals and loses to the Warriors.
Lakers.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll bet against LeBron James when LeBron James fails.
Okay. That's fair. I can somewhat get behind that.
I can fully understand. I'll tell you one bet that I do love. I do like Thunder at 16-1 to win the finals right now.
Yeah, that's not bad. I just
good number.
I can't bet against the Warriors.
I'm not betting against. You shouldn't bet. Is what I'm saying on NBA finals odds? But if you got to, like, who is a team that can actually? I think who would give the Warriors the best run in the Western Conference? Probably the Thunder. Who do I think will actually be in the Western Conference Finals with the Warriors? Again, I'm not betting against LeBron James. Do your segue.
I would bet on betonline.ag. It is just the best place to place bets. It's another huge week across the NBA, given that it's All-Star Week. There's only one place to get in on all this action. Betonline.ag, it's sports, it's a casino, it's a virtual casino, you name it. They are CLNS Media's preferred sportsbook online. Use that promo code CLNS50 for that 50% sign-up bonus. That's CLNS50. You can go use your mobile phone to sign up today at betonline.ag. Try in-game live betting where you can participate with all of the action on every play. Again, that promo code is CLNS50 for a 50% sign-up bonus. The thing that I am personally most looking forward to this week is the NBA dunk contest. It is just going to be super fun. We've got, yes, young players in their crazy dunkers. We got John Collins, Miles Bridges, Dennis Smith, Hamidou Diallo. The odds here, John Collins is plus 120, Miles Bridges plus 200, Dennis Smith plus 300, Hamidou Diallo plus 500. I think that Collins number is fucking crazy. There's no way he should be the favorite. There's no way he should be the favorite.
Do they know something?
I don't know. I don't think so. My bet on this, I will bet on this. I will bet on Hamidou Diallo at plus 500. 5-1 is good odds for Diallo. The first time I saw Hamidou Diallo, he was like a sophomore right before his junior year, getting ready for a game against, I want to say someone on the AAU circuit or whatever. He's, playing for his AAU team. And I see him jump for the first time and he tries to throw down this ridiculous left-handed windmill where he jumps from his baseline. He jumps from like 13 feet away from the basket probably and almost puts it down. He just missed it and he's like fucking 16 at the time. And I'm just like, what? Who is this? Is this guy an alien? Like, it was the craziest thing I've ever seen on a missed dunk from a kid that was like 16 years old. It was bananas.
Man. Okay. And you can get him at 5-1?
You can get him at 5-1. Dennis Smith is a good dunker too. Dennis Smith,
very good dunker.
Really good
dunker.
Haven't
we seen Dennis Smith? I haven't watched a dunk contest in probably 12 years.
He was in it last year. He had a really, really, really good opening dunk last year, and then I think he ended up getting eliminated in the first round.
Oh man, sounds like his career.
Oh no. Miles Bridges plus 200. He's the hometown favorite. He's going to have the crowd behind him. And he also has the nastiest AAU dunk I've ever seen. If you go and Google Miles Bridges AAU Bahamas dunk, he baptized some poor Bahamian soul that tried to leap with him with just the most disgusting tomahawk. Like, Jason Tatum is sitting, he's sitting on the bench. He's sitting on the bench and literally came out onto the court, like, probably 10 feet and then realized, oh my God, there's an actual game happening. I can't come out on the court like this, and like ran back to the court. But it is the most insane dunk I think I have seen on the AAU circuit. Do you have this pulled up?
I'm pulling it up right now. I accidentally typed in Miles Turner and that did not provide what I was looking for.
Hey, shout out Miles Turner, potential defensive player of the year, Miles Turner.
Okay. Miles Bridges, Nike EYBL Bahamas dunk. Is this what I want?
Yes.
Okay. It's an 18-second long clip. I've clicked on it. Drives to the baseline. Oh, my God. Oh. Was he and Monk, were him and Monk on the same AAU team?
No, so that's like a special like EYBL like all-star team that they put together. Oh, my
God. That kid's dead.
Yeah, he like he totally baptized him. Go to betonline.ag, use that promo code CLNS50, and you'll get that 50% sign-up bonus. It just a ridiculous dunk. What do you think of this whole Anthony Davis situation, by the way?
I hate how the NBA is basically punishing a team for doing what a lot of other teams have done. Like, where's Chandler Parsons right now? Like, there's a bunch of guys who just got exiled. I mean, Zach Randolph right. got exiled, straight up exiled from the Sacramento Kings, and then was traded mid-season. And like, no one fined the Sacramento Kings anything, but now the Pelicans want to basically do right by Anthony Davis, even though Anthony Davis probably doesn't see it that way, and certainly do right by their asset, which is essentially what Davis has created. That is what he is to them now. And by his own volition, he has said, I want to be traded. Okay, well, now we can only view you as a trade asset and not as part of something we're building here. And they can't protect their asset as they best see fit without the NBA coming in. I think that's just bullshit. It's really selective enforcement. And while I understand where the NBA is coming from, if you are going to police that rule, you have to police it across the board. And there are just countless examples around the NBA where that rule has just not been enforced at all. And just because it's a high profile player doesn't mean that, you know, you shouldn't have the ability to kind of do whatever you want with them, at least in that scenario.
So I agree with you. I'm with you on this wholeheartedly. I think it's ridiculous that they have to play Anthony Davis right now. I think it's ridiculous that there is selective enforcement on this stuff. Like you said, I think that Carmelo Anthony was forced to sit down and be away from the team.
Like, I thought that Carmelo Anthony got cut. It turned out he was just hanging out in New York while on the Rockets payroll. Like,
right. Yeah.
What the fuck? Like, Carmelo Anthony's a very big name.
My assumption is that like these players agreed to this in some way, maybe discussion between the team. I don't know.
Do you think Melo really agreed to it?
Yeah. And like Chandler Parsons, I think he would rather be playing. It seems
exactly.
like,
exactly. That's my thought.
But like, I get where the NBA is coming from too. Here's my take on all of this. So I think that the Pelicans are trying to like thread this needle right now between, all right, how can we try and make this work to where we can sit him out without having to pay him or having to pay the league $100,000 every time? Because mm-hmm. to be honest, if I was New Orleans,
I'd break his
saying,
toes.
No, I wouldn't break his toes. I would just pay $100,000. They have 25 games left. So you'd pay $2.5 million.
You think that the Benson family is going to pay $2.5 million for this?
I don't think they will, but I would if I was them. I would protect my asset.
I agree with that. But especially when it's all, we'll get into this maybe a little bit later, like this is all tax write-off stuff, like legitimately. So, you know, I don't really like, oh, he got fined. Like, great. He doesn't have to pay as much in taxes this year. Yeah, they shouldn't. But again, maybe they're hoping that he tweaks something just a little bit and then they can ride that wave. But the fact that they have to be thinking that is really ridiculous.
The fact that they have to be thinking it is like totally fucking bananas to me.
It's not bananas. This happens all the time where like basically the law like, creates a bigger problem than it's actually fixing or in theory
fixing. They have the 39th pick. all that they would have to do, they could sell the 39th pick for $3 million next year very easily. $3.5 million next year. They would make back what they lose on Anthony Davis. You could maybe do like $3.5 million and a future second from someone else to make sure you don't actually like full on lose an asset. But we see teams buy picks all the time. You could make up the money by selling your second round pick this year. It's just
plus it's not as if they can't ask for every second round pick in existence for Anthony Davis. They'll be able to make it up.
Exactly right. Like, you can just say, hey, we have to pay $2.5 million to keep Anthony Davis on the sidelines.
We're going to need 2 second round picks. Like, you could ask for 24 second round picks and no one's going to stop you.
We have to sell our second round pick now because of this. So just give us your second round picks and no one's good. Like, no one trading for Anthony Davis is going to be like, no, we can't get rid of these, or we have to hold on to these second round picks. We have to, no, if they're going to be like, no, it's Anthony Davis.
If I'm the team trainer, which means I'm also the New Orleans Saints team trainer, probably. I just go to Anthony Davis. I say, let me see your pinky finger. And I just bend it back a little bit. Doesn't have to break, but just enough to sprain it a little bit.
No.
Be like, oh, is that finger kind of hurts? Like, yeah, it kind of does hurt.
The Game Theory Podcast does not endorse.
This is levels. This is levels here. I'm playing chess. Everyone else is playing chess.
Does not endorse Dieter Kurtenbach playing chess. I am publicly disavowing this.
Here's another thing you can do, right? You go into his house late at night, you switch out his pillows. Then he wakes up, he's got his little, oh man, my neck's a little weird. I guess he can't play for the next 25 games.
This is a bad idea. Do not do this. This is terrible. Please do not listen to Dieter Kurtenbach.
Except for on this next point, which is
point. Yes.
Just saying, switch out a Sealy Tempur-Pedic with something else, just like a regular down pillow. That's going to mess up your neck.
Yeah, you know, like Bill Simmons had a lot of thoughts on this yesterday. And like Bill got like a lot of shit for it. I didn't understand why Bill got shit for this.
We're talking about the Davis thing still?
Yeah. So he said the situation is ludicrous. It's been a fun NBA season on the court and an absolute train wreck off the court. If you sign a massive deal to be someone's max player, here's an idea. Show up every night and be their best player. What are you doing, AD? AD now wants to play after snaking his franchise on a Monday to launch a news cycle, undermining his own trade value, having his agents repeatedly leak stuff to the media, and trying to force a trade to a specific team with a year and a half left on his deal. Fans and media have become numb to NBA players doing whatever the F they want. Davis could have waited until this summer to do this. Instead, he imploded the situation for leverage. It didn't work, and now he's pretending to be the victim. I want to play, like in quotes, and he says, this is so lame. I'm actually with Bill.
I have zero disagreement on that.
On this a lot. Yeah, and like, I'm someone who tends to come things from like,
right?
Yeah, like I'm someone who like comes at this from a player's rights perspective most of the time. Like, I actually do think that people don't treat players like people often enough.
Valid.
But at the end of the day, I think Bill is just like right on this.
It's a good segue here too.
Like, we need to do better at understanding that there is a medium between, you know, shut up and dribble and what Anthony Davis is doing right now. Right.
Well, this is the thing where it's all part of the soap opera, right? Like, what the hell are we doing for a living?
Right. This is what we talk about. This is what we do.
And that doesn't mean we're special, but the fact that there's the ability for us to do this for a living speaks to the fact that this is much larger than a bunch of guys on the court dribbling. And in many ways, that is used in a very positive light, and you know, it gives people that probably would not have had a similar voice a massive impact on society and culture. And but let's not forget what we're doing here. This is a sport ball game, and it's a $1 billion industry. I mean, billions and billions and billions of dollars. And yes, the players have done really well by themselves. They are all, you know, Star Player Inc. and, you know, making tens of millions of dollars a year, if not hundreds of millions of dollars a year in some cases. All of that is great. Everyone's rooting for it. But at the same time, you have to remember the base of the soap opera is the fact that the NBA gets billions of dollars for its television rights. And you have to be part of the show. And I ultimately think that this show is getting kind of trashy lately when we look at things out off the court. The on the court product, I would argue, has never been better in some ways. we can get into that debate another time, because certainly, you know, old heads are going to have differing opinions. But the soap opera and the pettiness and all of the Kardashianization of this off the court has really gotten out of control to a certain extent. And
but the reason it's gotten out of control is because there's appetite for it being out of control. Like, we want to know what's happening with team building. Team building is certainly everything. What I've made my career on. I'm not going to sit here and pretend otherwise.
No one wants to read about the Charlotte Hornets. Sorry. Like, it's about stars and it's about big markets. And
see, like, honestly, I do want to read about the Charlotte Hornets.
There's not enough of you, Sam. And I tell you this all the time.
It's accurate, but like, it's just like I want to read as much as I can about Kemba Walker's free agency. You know what I mean? Like, that is an important story. It's not as important as Kevin Durant.
But no one's talking about how can Kemba Walker get another star to come to Charlotte so that they can create a media empire nonsense.
Just wait until post deadline, Dieter, or post All-Star break. I'm sorry.
They had the other star there. His name was Dwight Howard.
Oh God, Jesus. What are you doing?
I'm just being a dick.
Oh man. Do you know what Dwight Howard has?
Does he have a full head of hair? Is this where your transition's going?
Well, I was going to say he has a problem with gas, and one way to help the problem with gas is Hims. Go to Hims4Hims.com. 66% of men lose their hair by the age of 35. The thing is that when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. If that hairline slowly starts to move backwards, if you have any bald spots, how are you going to feel a year from now? Your solution is 4Hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. The whole idea here is that Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. These are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. These are no waiting rooms, no awkward doctor visits. You save hours by going to 4hims.com. You just answer a few quick questions. Your doctor will review and will prescribe you what you need. And products are shipped directly to your door. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/game theory. That's forhims.com/game theory. GAMETHE. O-R-Y, 4hims.com/game theory. Let's talk about the Kevin Durant of everything that you just mentioned in regard to media. You were in the press conference where Kevin decided to talk about the Knicks without really being asked about the Knicks, sort of, but not really.
The whole thing is so goddamn meta.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't asked about Kristaps Porzingis and then like brought up Kristaps.
Let's run it back.
Yeah, just like give me everything that you feel on this.
Yeah, because I'm a character in this play too. Two Thursdays ago, right? The Knicks make a very bold decision to trade Kristaps Porzingis, therefore clearing two salary spaces. And immediately, as everyone is trying to figure out what the fuck the Knicks are doing, the chatter starts, right? And there was a initial presumption that, oh, well, now they actually, you know, they've always, you know, the Knicks and Kevin Durant have been linked all year. Who knows where that link initially came from, but it certainly didn't go away. And now they actually have the money to not just get him in free agency, something they didn't have before they traded Porzingis with the salary dumps that they included, but now they have the opportunity to get another player. And in fact, that other player very quickly turned out that their number one target was Kyrie Irving, who seemed disgruntled. Now, Kyrie on Friday, if I remember correctly, it was either Friday or Saturday following the trade, was asked about the trade, and the rumors, again, substantiated or not, they were out there, and someone asked him about them because it's about him. And he goes, and you know, this is a guy who, let's not forget, had said, I'm coming back, I'm the leader of this team, all this stuff. Then he goes, asked me on July 1, which was a bit of a change, and only lended more credence to the Kyrie to the Knicks along with Kevin Durant conversation. All the meanwhile, that conversation is working its way into NBA front offices and amongst the agent class, and it's no longer speculation anymore. There are a bunch of people around the NBA who feel certain with a capital C, that Kevin Durant and his team, led by Rich Kleiman, have made promises to the New York Knicks that they will get, quote-unquote, a fair shake at this thing, which is a bit of a wink-wink situation from the from these people's perspective. That's interesting to me. I'm pretty sure that should be interesting to everybody else, because Kevin Durant is probably going to go down as the greatest scorer in NBA history when it's all said and done, if he can play long enough. And the Warriors are unquestionably the best dynasty of the last 15 years, and could be the greatest dynasty in modern NBA history if Kevin Durant does stick around. So all that conversation is happening. Kyrie Irving is throwing gas on the fire. And my first thought is, we got to get a quote from Kevin on this. And I know what that quote's going to be. It's going to be, shut the fuck up. I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I'm just trying to hoop and enjoy this season, because Kevin, unlike Kyrie, had been saying all year, ask me on July 1, in effect. And so we kind of stopped asking him about it in the local media because, again, we knew what the answer was. But the paradigm had changed pretty significantly with all of this conversation, and people who I trust to know this stuff with pretty good clairvoyance, if not excellent sourcing, saying that this was a lock, that it was done. And that vibe, to be honest, had kind of been around the Warriors all year, but you kind of mitigate it, you compartmentalize it. I know his teammates have done a good job in compartmentalizing it, because you just don't know. And Kevin's a super inscrutable guy, and he keeps things close to the vest. So when that kind of stuff leaks out, it certainly, you know, perks your ears up. So the entire goal was, hey, let's see what Kevin's up to. But on Thursday night, he's not at his locker. And then at Friday, he's requested for media, and he isn't there, not available, which is kind of strange. Just kind of strange. Then Saturday, it's like, oh, okay, Saturday, we'll talk at the locker. We'll get this out of the way. We'll call it a day. Because Kevin's always at his locker. He's usually one of the last guys to leave the locker room. He sits there, and he just kind of holds court with whoever wants to roll by. And he's a very thoughtful, insightful guy, and he'll tell you whatever he thinks about whatever pretty much all the time, both on and off the record. And he's not there again on Saturday. And on Saturday, I go, here's something that's interesting. And I noted it perhaps a bit harder than Anthony Slater, but he noted it as well, which is Kevin has been unavailable for the last 3 days, right as all of this other shit is happening. And this is super peculiar, because honestly, since he's gotten to the Warriors, he's always been arguably the easiest star of the four or five to get of all of Golden State. And that is a super accessible organization. That is something they preach from the top down. So then I don't think they had a practice that Sunday. Monday rolls around, and I think we ask for him, and he brushes off media relations. And then couldn't find, you know, it turned out to be a whole week, 7 days, where Durant had, in some cases, been actively ducking an obvious question that we just kind of had to get out of the way. And it became a thing onto itself. So what was first just a note then turns into something much larger, because Ethan Strauss of The Athletic writes a very well-reasoned, well-sourced article basically saying Kevin's silence is not a coincidence.
Shout out The Athletic. It's just such a great company. It's a terrific organization.
He wrote a wonderful article that I thought summarized these things in a very real, you know, in a very real and tangible manner, basically stating, like, this silence is not a coincidence. There is an underlying belief that Kevin's gone, and that this Knicks stuff is part of that situation, and it's all just an inevitability. He put down a lot of the stuff that a lot of people have been hearing. And so, yeah, Kevin didn't like that article very much. He didn't like my asking where he was on Sunday. He spent most of his Super Bowl Sunday, it seemed, liking all the negative tweets regarding that one. Whatever, doesn't matter to me one bit. He can spend his day as he sees fit. I think it was the day or two after the Ethan one, he went off, and you've seen it by now.
So, yeah, I mean, what did you make of all of that, I guess, is the question. Like, what is your takeaway from all of that?
I think Kevin's getting exactly what he wants out of this situation, which is that he can create a narrative that the local media is trying to drive him out of the marketplace.
So I guess what makes you say that?
The fact that he's too smart to keep saying things that are this disingenuous.
He is he's very savvy, I think is the way I would put it. He knows what he's doing.
That's a much better word. Yeah. He knows exactly what he's doing.
When he does this stuff, right? Like, it's amazing looking through Kevin's likes. They literally are all likes about how terrible your article was. It is incredible. What a move from Kevin.
It's a good move, because, right, like, I have no recourse in that.
His last like before you wrote an article KD's free agency drama has reached a tipping point. No one can pretend as if everything is normal around the Dubs. You wrote that on February 3rd.
Yes.
His last like before February 3rd on Twitter came October 5th, 2018.
Yeah.
What a move.
Power move. It was a good power move.
What a move. I love it.
But that's the thing. Like, the day before that, I had written that the Knicks were the number one threat to the Warriors dynasty. No one noticed. Yeah. Like, and it's fine. Like, it got a decent amount of reads, and it's fine. I said what I had to say on that. I'm just not going to pretend in the era of Clutch Sports doing what they just did, and with all of the conversation around the league being that Rich Kleiman's kind of pulling a similar thing, that's not happening. And I'm not going to pretend that Kevin Durant leaving isn't the biggest fucking story of the year, or the possibility of him leaving isn't the biggest fucking story of the year. Like, we all just kind of forgot that that's a possibility because Kevin asked us not to. I'm kind of done playing that game. And if he wants to be angry about that, he can be angry about that.
So, yeah, I think that you and Ethan writing something on it is very interesting because it's been out there the whole year. Like, you and this is not the first time you and I have talked about this on the podcast. Like, you and I have talked about this the whole year on the podcast, kind of.
It's the only story.
I can't remember the last time that we talked about the Warriors where we didn't talk about this.
Right. The Warriors are viewed as, and fairly, as this unassailable just juggernaut. They were not viewed as a super team before Kevin Durant showed up. And fair, right? They were kind of this darling thing until until Draymond Green started kicking dudes. And then Kevin Durant shows up, and now they are the Death Star, the supervillains, the mortal enemy of the people. And Kevin Durant can leave and put the Warriors in a tricky spot. They'd still be good, don't get me wrong, but they're not the Warriors, capital T, capital W there. They're not the super team. They're not the league ruiners, all this stuff. And Durant has given no reassurances to anyone that he's coming back. No, zero. And right now, all of the evidence, if you want to call it that, is pointing in one direction. And it's towards leaving. I'm not even going to say where. I mean, it's New York, but like, it's leaving. That is a huge fucking deal. If the Warriors dictate everything in the NBA today, that is in large part because Kevin Durant is there. And if Kevin Durant is not there, the entire league changes in a extremely tangible way immediately. This is on par with LeBron James's the decision, not necessarily because the players are on par, but because of the stakeholder, the team that he's leaving and the team that he can go to and all of this stuff. And it's like, we're just going to just sweep that under the rug and bring it up on July 1? Fuck no. It's crazy to me. It's crazy to me. But for Kevin to then go into this press conference with a gruff. Now, mind you, again, the question that he answered, or he didn't even get asked it, because then the story became something larger, which is Kevin Durant's ducking the media regarding Knicks questions, as opposed to Kevin Durant said this about the Knicks. He goes in hot and bothered, fine. He gets whatever he wanted to get off his chest. And then his argument is, I don't like beat writers making stuff up, you know, and this and that. Like, we have a relationship. And it's like, fuck, like, you should have come and talked to me about it. That was the entire fucking point. The entire fucking point of the beef, if you will, was that Kevin Durant wasn't talking to us. And listen, that's not a high and mighty, we're the media and you need to talk to us stuff. It was merely an observation that this is very different, as a lot of other different stuff is happening outside of this that seems to pertain, or at least people are saying pertains, to Kevin Durant. And then you want to come in and do this, like, you should have played this by the book thing. You have to, it takes two to tango in that regard. And he straight up wasn't. So he says he has nothing to do with the Knicks. I call bullshit. And I think that that's just where we're going to be for the rest of the year, because there are a lot of other people that are talking for him and saying very definitive things. And I'm not one of those people, and nor is Ethan. He should take care of, you know, he should take care of the situation in-house, because there is stuff that has people to believe that a decision has been made around the NBA. And if that's not the case, that's not anything I said, and it's not anything that Ethan said, and it's not anything that he said publicly. So that's on him. My job is to report and comment and cut through bullshit. And perhaps I, you know, to most people that might, you know, be inferred as I'm adding to bullshit. And fair enough, we can have that conversation a different day. But I just think he's getting exactly what he wants out of this, which is he's creating a narrative that the Bay Area media is on his jock and bothering him every day. He said, you guys come in here every day and ask us about free agency. And I'll give Monty Poole, the NBC Bay Area reporter, like, infinite credit, which he already had in my book. But he deserves to be lauded for this. He goes, no, we haven't, in so many terms. He tries to be the voice of reason. Like, we haven't asked you about this. And Kevin then just went off on some projectile tangent. And it's like, this is not how somebody who has nothing to hide acts, right? This is the worst interrogation you could ever have. I thought Ethan put it perfectly. Why is Kevin acting as if his hands are tied when he is the only one in control of the situation?
Kevin owns a multimedia company that conspicuously is moving to New York right now.
I'm sure it's just because the rent is cheap there.
He owns a media company. If he wanted to say something about this and just wanted to bypass you guys,
this was my prerogative.
You could literally just like bring, you can use your media company to release a YouTube video. Hey, I have nothing to do, you know, like I have nothing to do with this. So, you know, it's bizarre, you know, and again, like this comes from me who wants to, like, I'm someone who hates the way the media acts a lot of the time. Like, I actively don't enjoy, like, you know, the pestery nature of stuff. And yeah. I get frustrated by dumb questions in press conferences. And
you,
like,
and I both.
I laugh when, you know, I get like when people, like, you know, just like kind of give a goofy look to a media person, including myself. Like, that's happened,
like,
before.
The thing is, like, we're actors in the show too, right? Like, the media, yeah, but, the media has, like, a role to play.
I guess that, like, I just look at them and I'm like, hey, you know, you guys are the experts here. You know, I do what I can to know basketball. Like, I've certainly tried to do what I can in order to learn what I need to do the job in a strong manner. You know, most of the time I think that, like, I, you know, people tell me that I know the game pretty well. Like, I've actively tried to do that, though, and I think a lot of media people don't actively try to do that, and I think it's led to a tenuous relationship with athletes interact with media, because I don't think that a lot of media people respect the work that, like, has to be put in to learn the game in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But at the same token, too, I just think that athletes also should communicate in some way with their fans, with whoever, and the best way for them to do that oftentimes is through the media, or it's through the literal multimedia platform that you own. And you could easily put out a YouTube video, disseminate it through your 17 million Twitter followers and say, hey, you know, I'm not going to be answering any questions about this. Going dark is just not a play, in my
especially opinion. For a guy who never goes dark.
Right.
Straight up, had never gone dark before that.
Yeah. If you're DeMarcus Cousins and you have for 8 years now made it known that you don't like dealing with the media and, like, that is your least favorite thing to do, then it plays a little bit better.
And ultimately, at some point, the fans want to know what the fuck is going on.
Well, yeah.
Like, and you got to say something to this effect.
Like, I don't care about doing the dance. To be honest, I do not care. I, like, if you,
I
don't
usually
want to talk
don't,
to the
but
media,
in this situation,
not,
I did.
Like, if you do not want to talk to the media, don't talk to the media. But then you have to somehow answer the questions that they are doing. If you're an athlete in today's day and age, you have a million avenues to do that. So just do it.
No problem with not talking to the media, but you have to say something on this matter.
And well, it's not that you have to. It's just smart. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
no, that's a very good way of putting it. Yeah. No, yeah, you don't, like, have to do anything, but you should.
Yeah. Like, you're not forced to do this. It's just,
that's a good point.
You are relinquishing the ability you have to control your own narrative if you don't do it.
That's the whole thing. I think that there's now this narrative that's been created after all of this is Kevin Durant, you know, doesn't owe you in the media anything. And it's like, yeah, that's 100% true. I mean, he's contractually obligated to talk to us, but he doesn't have to say shit. Like, he can be the world's worst quote. That's fine. He doesn't owe us anything. But I don't owe Kevin Durant anything either. And that's, I think, where the paradigm that's my least favorite part about all of this. Not getting chastised by Durant or all this stuff, or, oh, Kevin doesn't like me. Like, I don't care about that. I don't owe Kevin Durant anything. I'm not going to pretend as if that was a normal circumstance. And that shit isn't, you know, people aren't talking behind the scenes. And people don't like that. I guess they can just live in ignorance all they want.
I don't know. Do we care to talk about buyout guys? Wayne Ellington signed with the Pistons.
Cool.
Yeah, like, he decided to go with playing time instead of a contender, which I think is a reasonable decision on his part.
Who signed with the Pacers? Someone signed with the Pacers.
Yes, Wes Matthews signed with the Pacers.
Oh, right, Wes Matthews and Ellington. They're like the same person in my mind.
Yeah, like two guys that could have really helped in a lot of ways.
A true bona fide contender. I actually don't. I mean, like the Pacers are actually doing a pretty good job of holding themselves up, given not having Victor Oladipo. I like that move. I mean, I don't think it puts them in the class of the best in the East anymore, which is a conversation we could have had if Oladipo was still around and they were playing like this. But yeah, you know.
Yep, Robin Lopez. Good. He's interesting. Markieff Morris, you know, I guess the Morris Lakers.
Where do you think? Lakers or Rockets? Those seem to be the two big options.
Yeah, I think those are two really good choices. Enes Kanter.
Is Enes Kanter going to get signed anywhere?
I would think someone signs him just because he is a good bench scorer.
Yeah. Who do you think that team is?
Who that is?
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Good question.
Not gonna be the Warriors.
Could the Wizards just like use him?
Maybe.
Like it's not a terrible idea to me. Frank Kaminsky. I actually think Frank Kaminsky, like sneaky.
Wait a minute. The Alderman got bought out.
He hasn't yet, but it's a potential thing.
Alderman Kaminsky. Man. Okay. Yeah. You know, Frank Kaminsky. If you just want a guy to stand 16 feet away from the hoop, set a pick, and then turn around and knock down a shot, Mo Spate style, he's your man.
Carmelo Anthony to the Lakers is probably a thing, maybe.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad that you yawned right in the middle of it. Freudian yawn.
Marching Gortat?
Nah, man. Gortat's washed.
Greg Monroe. Like we have all these bigs. Like maybe Shelvin Mack. I mean, who did Ben McLemore sign with?
Has he?
He's not signing with the Raptors. Apparently there was a report, but he is not signing with the Raptors.
Pat McCaw was too dominant on that 14th man on the roster spot.
Oh, no.
That's another guy who didn't play his cards right this year.
Yeah, he didn't really do that all that well.
I'm rooting for him.
Can Michael Beasley help someone?
Oh, dear. I mean, couldn't help the Lakers, and they were begging for help. So I'd like to think no.
Go to the Rockets, Bees. You were great with the Rockets. I think that's about it.
Yeah, not a great buyout market. I mean, maybe somebody that we don't foresee will hit it, and you know the paradigm will change a little bit. But I'll tell you, I do think that you know the Warriors are obviously looking at the buyout market in a pretty serious manner. They kept a roster spot open all year, and I'm not sure if they want to go wing or center. But Lopez to the Warriors. Has a little bit of heat behind it and has for a while. I think that's his number one choice. The question is if the Warriors get in line and decide that they want to add a center, given how Cousins has been kind of ragdolled against really athletic centers as of recent, which is to be expected given his injury. I'm not sure Robin Lopez does any better, but you know, just having a little bit of depth could be helpful because Looney and Cousins aren't necessarily providing much force out there.
Anything you like?
Yeah, Caris LeVert's back. Caris LeVert's playing again. That's awesome because Caris LeVert was really awesome before he got injured, and it was really sad when he got injured. And he avoided the worst, and now he's playing again. And the Nets are like 500 and good and interesting. And Caris LeVert was having a breakout year, and I'm just happy. I hope he can get back to that form because it was really fun to watch that come to pass. And man, I'm just going to stay on this Nets bandwagon, and Caris LeVert's a big part of that bandwagon.
Thing that I like, I'm getting back into movies again after a long hiatus early in the season.
Movies,
it really did. That's a really good point. It might have just like totally turned me off of movies for a while.
How bad it was.
So I've watched I'm starting to keep track of movies that I watch. That's been one of my goals this year.
What does that entail? Is that like an Excel spreadsheet?
Yeah, I have like a note sheet where I give like a letter grade to every movie that I've seen. I've seen 30 movies this year.
Wow.
So I've done pretty well.
It's pretty good.
Best movie I've seen is A Star Is Born. Like, no question, I think.
Really? That's a no question.
Yeah, I think it's like 100% the best movie I've seen this year.
I think so too, but I haven't kept up as much. I haven't watched Roma yet. Have you watched Roma?
I have not watched Roma. That's this week.
People swear by that one.
Roma, Vice, and Can You Ever Forgive Me is this week for sure. I know. I still have not seen it. I watched Bad Times at the El Royale this weekend.
How is that?
It was good. It was really good. It was long. It was okay. Really,
yeah, I'm looking
good
forward
though.
To that. I got a flight coming up here soon. I would. That seems like a winner on the flight because I saw the trailer and I'm like, yeah, I want to see that. And I just never got around to it and didn't really do well at the box office. So I figured that there was sort of a correlation between one and two. But I don't know. It did seem interesting. Certainly original.
It's good.
Is it an original movie? Like, is it?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's very Tarantino-y. Like, it's it's like basically it's like knockoff Pulp Fiction kind of y. Yeah, well,
okay.
But it's good. Like, it's for an imitation of that. It's very good.
Okay. Good to know.
I watched The Favorite last night.
How is The Favorite?
It was good.
Not
it wasn't
not an immediate praise because some
it was
people,
not immediate praise. No.
Some people who see it are just all about The Favorite.
Yes. Not quite there. Olivia Colman. It's worth watching for Olivia Colman. Like that's it. Olivia Colman was fucking amazing. I saw Widows finally. I thought that was kind of overrated.
You've been killing it lately.
Yeah. I saw Green Book. I will say this. Green Book is like fine. It's
nothing,
just
nothing
not an
really,
Oscar movie. Like,
yeah, nothing tells the story of, you know, the racially segregated South and the plight of black men. About white guy.
It is for sure a white savior movie. Like,
yeah, I'm kind of over those.
Yeah. It's like
look at this one man who was decent.
It's a breezy 2 hours. Like it's, you know, there are funny moments. Mahershala is really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just fine. Velvet. I don't know if I talked about Velvet Buzzsaw on the podcast yet, but
Buzzsaw. I did see Velvet Buzzsaw.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
I finished it, which is a challenge these days. I thought Gyllenhaal was really good.
He was. Yeah. I liked the world building of the art world. I thought that
yes,
was really
they did a nice job. I hope it's accurate because I have no idea.
I thought it blended the satirical ideal with the world building and with the horror genre, the satire genre, and the horror genre. Blended
that's maybe
really
where
well
my that's maybe where my beef was. There was a lot going on, and ultimately, I didn't think that the acting carried it well enough to mix together those in what seemed to be very separate segments of film.
Mm-hmm. I liked, I also just liked the idea of like art being important. And
or expensive, like, one or the other.
Well, generally like there's also just like the feeling of, you know, art is so commodified now and the people who like commodify art and like, we can talk about this with basketball and like what I do. Right.
Yeah.
Like I essentially am the people that Velvet Buzzsaw is like talking against. Right.
Snobs.
And yeah. So, well, not even snobs, but like people who commodify the game, almost away from the artist or away from the artist or the game away from the athlete.
Right.
So like, I just thought it was an interesting perspective on that that I really enjoyed. And then scene is amazing. that rolls over the credits is amazing.
No, I know what you mean. And I won't give it away, but I did think it got kind of really corny at the end.
A little bit.
It got like super corny. And like, I'm like, if it was like this the entire way, that would have been interesting, right? Or if it had been building towards this horror thing. But I wasn't sure what the fuck the movie was about for the first hour, other than like this art. And it's like, are you sure this is a horror? And it's certainly not a comedy. And I think my bigger beef was sort of the main actress in all of it, and Gyllenhaal's on and off love interest in all of it, was like not compelling at all in her role.
Yeah, she was. I had never seen her. She's a British actress. I know that.
Yeah.
But I had never seen her. She was fine, I thought.
I thought that it really took away from the overall film, in my opinion.
A little bit. I can buy that. It's
and Malkovich out of nowhere.
Zawe Ashton, I guess is her name. She was not the standout of that movie.
Not a good role. I mean, is what it is. If the entire point was for her to be this like conflicted but powerful and power hungry and all, yeah, like it being this complex character, all I got was that she was really sad all the time.
Yeah. I think that's about all I got, man. I'm tired. It's been a long day.
Sorry, I had to just get all of that off my chest. I feel better now that I got all of that off my chest, Sam.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Jesus Christ, what a fucking mess this is.
Let's
play the Jazz tonight. By the way, buy your Jazz stock now, because if they beat the Warriors tonight, they're going to be the hot topic coming out of the All-Star game.
Let's get out of here.
Thank God.
Tune in next time to the Game Theory Podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Android. We'll be back later this week.
You got Cole coming?
I think we're going to talk about, like, yeah, if Zion Williamson is, like, the best, like, one of the best assets in the NBA right now.
Love that idea. Love that idea. Knicks have lost what, 17 straight?
Yeah. So
wonder what they're trying to do.
Oh yeah, I know. Shout out Mario Hezonja for just like destroying Marquise Chris last night, by the way.
It's a fucking AAU Bahamas dunk.
Yeah, it was. Until that's gonna be our new standard, AAU Bahamas dunk. Until next time though, we'll talk soon. Bye.